It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Lake Superior's five national parks contain treasured resources, and now these parks deploy a plan to cut their emissions with the help of the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation. Be part of this discussion about parks going carbon neutral. Call in with a question, add comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Tom Irvine is Executive Director of the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation. Tom, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, good morning, Kate. Great to be here.
So if national parks, parks in general, have a relatively low carbon footprint, how ambitious is this goal to go carbon neutral?
Well, it's actually very ambitious. And you're right, the carbon footprint of most of the national parks is honestly negligible, but they are a tremendous example to the public. It's where the public meets and recreates in these just iconic natural resources, and it's a learning opportunity, a teaching opportunity for the parks to share these concepts with the public. But there's also a practical need to move toward a carbon neutrality in the parks, especially with the accelerating warming climate, especially in the Lake Superior in the North Country, fire dangers and just the changing environment ecosystem around these parks is pretty rapid and dramatic, and the need to move out of fossil fuel powered heating sources to machinery and equipment is kind of essential. So
where do national park emissions come from? Where are the sources?
Well, kind of a good example that really started this whole initiative for us was at Isle Royale National Park, which is the most remote and hard to reach national park in the continental United States. It's an island park. It's actually part of Michigan, but it's about 20 miles offshore from Grand Portage, Minnesota. And Isle Royale operates off of diesel generators. So people visit the park and they're up there for their unique, amazing, hard to get to wilderness adventure, and in the distance they hear the hum of diesel generators powering the infrastructure of that island. And that's been a kind of a thorn in the side of both visitors and park employees for years, but there's never been a sustainable effort to transition from diesel and carbon powered usage to solar, which there's been solar efforts started but never completed. And our project really started with a vision to complete that work at Isle Royale. And then from there, we had a very generous private donation to this work who said, well, if you're going to do one, why don't you do all 5 years? Why don't you do the whole lake, which would be all five of the national park units on the lake?
And it just makes me wonder, though, to get to some of these remote places, you do need to go by boat. Are boats part of this plan as well, the transportation piece?
Well, that's a great question. Our project is really starting with the land-based infrastructure and land-based vehicle usage. Mm-hmm. Boats, especially on Lake Superior, carbon electric boats or hybrid boats are just not show ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
That's the technology is coming up rapidly, but that's not available yet. But that's definitely on our game plan. It's just not on day one.
You mentioned there's a philanthropic partner to get to carbon neutral for these five national parks. Can you talk about the funding in order to get to decarbonization?
Well, initially, when we started this project, we thought that the ratio of public to private support for the project would be heavily oriented toward federal funding based on the IRA climate and energy monies and the bipartisan infrastructure money.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And what it's really turned out to be, the early phases of the project have primarily been supported by private foundations and private individuals. So, and that's been very robust, and there's a lot of public interest in getting behind this project. It's working with the federal government is not it's not a rapid process. It takes a while, and there's a lot of there's a lot of pieces that fit together to allow federal funding for major projects like this. And so what we're using private funding for is just to kind of grease the skids and knock off some of the easier projects that can be done rapidly.
But I wonder, having that private support perhaps also gives a bit more more of a seat at the table with the national park system and the federal government. It allows perhaps some more leverage to get to this goal.
Absolutely. 100%. When you walk into a negotiation with, with a fairly large donation ready to go toward this, you immediately get some attention. And most of the funding for National Park Service projects typically are matching grant projects. Require matching grants. So, we walk to the table with donors ready to match, and that helps move things along quickly.
Tom Irvine, Executive Director of the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation, with us to talk about environmental sustainability, carbon neutral goals at the five parks that ring Lake Superior. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Tom, let's discuss timeline here. Last year, your organization said the plan is to decarbonize the parks by 2027. How realistic is that timeline?
I probably wouldn't hang my hat on that timeline now, honestly, but it's moving. There's this actually very positive friction between the speed that the private donors and foundations want to put behind this project and the not quite that same cadence that the federal government works at. So it's I think between the two paces, we're going to definitely be able to move this project faster than a typical federal agency project.
You mentioned the diesel generators, and you've said how you intend the plan to be an inspiring model for park mm-hmm. visitors to lower their own carbon footprints. So what might people see, or what models could people see as they visit these parks?
Well, this whole project is built on concept. They're not even concepts. They're proven technologies and proven ideas that homeowners could do themselves. It's based on really the initial phase is just basic energy efficiency in windows, insulation, lighting, things that the parks can do that that people can do at home too. But then it's moving from there to transitioning HVAC systems from carbon powered HVAC, you know, natural gas or propane or heating oil furnaces to air source heat pumps, electric air source heat pumps, and really moving things to clean electricity.
Tom, what will happen to garbage thrown away at these parks? As you know, that waste has a carbon footprint as well.
Yes, it does. It has a big carbon footprint. And as part of the National Park Service's Green Parks Plan, there's a very comprehensive plan within the Park Service for eliminating single-use plastics and minimizing that, really that garbage footprint. But it's all part of it, for sure.
Tom Irvine leads the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation, which supports 5 national park sites. Call in with a question, share comments about a net zero emissions goal at these national parks. The number is 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation, in concert with the National Park Service, announced that 5 park sites are implementing plans to get their operations off fossil fuels and achieve net zero emissions. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Tom Irvine with us, Executive Director of the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation. Tom, you know, as you look out to Lake Superior, we've got the warming of the water. We have a really warm winter on record. How urgent is this change for the national parks around Lake Superior?
It's critical. So many of the cultural resources or the historic structures on the lake. In Wisconsin's Apostle Islands National Lakeshore, the lighthouses and the docks and historic facilities that are part of that island park are all under climate siege due to the warming, both the warming temperatures and lake water temperatures. So it's critical. And right now, certainly within our parks in the North Country, just the impending fire danger for this season, this upcoming season, due to kind of the lack of winter this year and the lack of snow cover is a big concern.
Meanwhile, the National Park Service says more than 325 million people visited national parks around America last year. How busy do you expect this year's tourism season to be for Lake Superior National Parks?
Busy. Mm-hmm. It's already starting out busy. I think a lot of people have heard about the spike in Park Service visitation during COVID, and then it slacked off a little bit last year, but it has come back. It is coming back strong this year. The five parks that we represent are expecting visitor probably over 3 million visitors this year, which would be a pretty healthy increase over last year.
Wow. So, what impact would that have perhaps on your foundation and the work that you're trying to do?
Well, hopefully it'll have a positive impact. And it's kind of up to us to get the word out and provide educational materials and really for us to work with the Park Service on educating their rangers and their seasonal staffs on what this project's all about.
So, are visitors to these parks like Apostle Islands and Isle Royale, as you talked about, Grand Portage, are visitors expected to change their ways as they enter and use these parks? What might change about a visitor's experience in coming years versus how they visited these places in the past?
Well, I think it's important for the visitors to kind of be mindful when they do visit the parks anyway, whether we're doing this project or not. Visit the parks with they're all of our parks. We all own them. They're national treasures, but be respectful. Do as much research as possible before visiting the park, and then I think visitors will have a much better experience. They'll be able to navigate their way around the parks more successfully, knowing in advance where they're going to go and what they want to see. And more of the visitors today are visiting up for shorter periods of time, and that that can create some pressure on the parks that didn't exist before. But I think for the most part, people understand that these are national treasures and they need to be maintained and protected. And anything that most of them can do, they want to do. So a big part of that is just like day one, don't bring single-use plastic into the park, period. And some of the parks are getting more really forceful about kind of mandating that too. So,
I wonder, do you hold a special attachment to Lake Superior or have a personal connection to the lake?
that seems like a loaded question, Kate. Quite possibly. No, I actually have lighthouse keepers in my family that go back to the 1880s, and just about every lighthouse on the lake, someone from my family was the keeper or assistant keeper at over the years. So Outer Island and Michigan Island at the Apostle Islands, Au Sable Lighthouse at Pictured Rocks, Rock of Ages at Isle Royale, the lighthouses in Duluth. So yeah, it's a pretty special place for me and my family.
I'd imagine if anyone is bearing witness to climate change, it's those lighthouse keepers.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we have the stories and the journals from the way it was. There's not the lighthouse keepers. That's not a job that exists on Lake Superior any longer. Everything's been automated, but it's a big change, and the stories of the way it the climate on the lake and the challenges before are pretty epic.
We're
So
talking with Tom Irvine, who's here, Executive Director of the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation, and efforts by these parks to go carbon neutral. Call in questions and comments at any point, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Tom, in terms of the ice caves of the Apostle Islands that have been closed due to unstable conditions, how can people safely enjoy the caves?
Well, unless there is safe ice cover on the lake, you're not going to see the ice caves in the wintertime. If you are a paddler, you can experience the caves in the summer season. If you are an experienced kayaker or paddler, or by boat. You can walk above the sea caves on the mainland side of the park. There's hiking trails that traverse the sea caves. You don't have a full view, but you get a good idea. So
2015, was that the last time Stable Ice allowed access to the ice caves?
I think that's right.
Yeah.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Were you out there then the last time?
No. I have to admit I was not.
So in our...
But I have had a peak during the winter when the ice was a little, was not so stable, and I don't think I would do that again.
In our last moments together, what could the Park Service be doing better to care for Lake Superior and its national parks?
Well, I think it's above the Park Service. I think it's providing adequate funding for the parks to operate, for the parks to have adequate staffing and adequate finances to fully manage the parks. They've been kind of funding starved for a lot of years right now, and I certainly advocate having the public write to their senators and Congress people to support adequate funding parks. It's necessary. They're a treasure.
Tom, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Tom Irvine is Executive Director of the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.